ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एके त्वाखिल कर्माणि संन्यास्यो पशमं गतः ज्ञानिनो ज्ञानवक्कि यज्ञेन यजन्ति ज्ञानविग्रहम्. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities, and having thus become peaceful, before perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. Report. Modern philosophers pursue knowledge without bothering to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus they naturally end up with meager, if not trivial, results. Om Agyantimidandasya Gyananjana chalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai sri guruve namaha. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities, and having thus become peaceful, perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. Today is the first day of the festival in Sri Vrindavan Dham. By the inconceivable causeless mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we have all been given this most precious opportunity to enter into the realm of Sri Vrindavan Dham. This particular passage from Srimad Bhagavatam and the story that is connected to it is very significant and instructive, especially on this occasion where devotees from many parts of the world have come to Vrindavan. We are reading from Canto 10, Chapter 40, Text number 6 from Srimad Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled The Prayers of Akrura. Srila Prabhupada, in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, explains that we should learn how to enter Vrindavan from Akrura. The spirit in which he traveled to Vrindavan and his state of consciousness when he entered into the Supreme Abode is an instruction by which we should all try to aspire to emulate. Akrura was called by Kamsa. Kamsa was in terrible anxiety. He had sent so many of his associates in the form of mystic demons into Vrindavan that practically every day Krishna was killing another one along with Sri Balaramji. Kamsa was very much bewildered, confused, and terrified of this. It was then that Narada Muni came to Mathura and specifically told Kamsa that that eighth son of Devaki that you have been fearing, that is Krishna. He's living under the protection of Nanda Maharaj in Brajbhumi. So upon hearing this, Kamsa was convinced that Krishna somehow or other must be killed immediately. You know how in sporting events there's a certain advantage to playing in your own court or your own stadium? Well, all these demons were coming into Krishna's abode. So somehow or other, Kamsa wanted to take Krishna out of Vrindavan and bring him to his abode. First he called Keshi and told Keshi, go to Vrindavan immediately and kill Krishna. It's very wonderful how all these powerful asuras were so obedient to Kamsa. It is explained in Garbha Samhita that Kamsa actually defeated all these demons one after another and had them on the verge of death until they vowed that they would be his servant and obey whatever he commanded. So he was very powerful. He personally had power of over 10,000 elephants. Can you imagine? Hare Krishna. After sending Keshi and Vyoma Sura to Vrindavan, he called Akrura. He knew that Akrura was very, very favorably disposed toward Krishna. He was a very good devotee. And Kamsa, such a diplomat, he wanted to use the goodness of Akrura to destroy Krishna. So he said, oh Akrura, you are so kind. Actually, of all the Yadu and Bhoja dynasty, you are the most kind person. And you're so gentle. Krishna Balaram, they love you very much. So you should go to Vrindavan. And you should invite them to come to Mathura. There will be a nice bow ceremony. We will have these bow, a nice sacrifice, and there will be a wrestling tournament also. And tell Nanda Maharaj that he should also come and bring taxes for me. So Akrura, and then he explained that I have found out from Narada that Krishna and Balaram are actually the enemies born of Vasudeva and Devaki that are meant for my death. When they come to Mathura, I will have Kuvalayapita waiting at the gate for them to kill them. If that doesn't work, I have Chanura and Mushtika who are waiting to destroy them in a wrestling match. So Akrura is accepting a demoniac mission which is meant for the destruction of Krishna and Balaram. But being a great Vaishnav, he had complete faith in the almighty power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he actually took this as a benediction. It was his opportunity to go to see Krishna face to face. Kamsa arranged a brand new, beautiful, ornamented chariot for this occasion. Kamsa was thinking that Akrura would really like to drive on this chariot, so he would be more inclined to follow my instructions. But the way a materialistic person thinks, in a way a devotee thinks, is completely the opposite. Akrura was thinking this chariot is very suitable for Krishna and Balaram to have nice ride on. So Kamsa is seeing everything according to his envious ego, and Akrura is thinking everything, seeing everything according to how he could best serve Lord Krishna. Thus he began his journey. As he was riding on his chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan, he was continuously offering prayers to Lord Krishna in his heart of hearts. The substance of those prayers were his great humility and his great anticipation to receive the mercy of the Lord. He was expressing genuinely from his heart that I am most fallen. I am most unworthy. I have no qualification to have the darshan of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Narayan himself, who is appearing as Krishna. However, the Lord is so merciful, so kind, that he does not discriminate who is fit or who is not fit if we just come to him in a spirit of submission and devotion. Then he began to praise Kamsa in his mind, that it is by Kamsa's mercy, by his grace, I am going to be allowed to see the Supreme Personality of God. Although I am so unqualified, so fallen, so unfit, when I fall at the lotus feet of the Lord, who is all merciful and the protector of his devotees, he will certainly embrace me and give me shelter of his lotus feet. Certainly Lord Balaramji will take me by the hand and bring me to his house. In this way, Akrura was praying in such great, great eagerness and anticipation, in a spirit of such humility. This is the consciousness one should have when coming to Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada said you cannot go to Vrindavan simply by hiring a taxi or rickshaw or getting a ticket on a train. To actually understand and realize Vrindavan, to actually see it as it is, can only come by the mercy of Krishna and Sri Radharani. Sri Radharani is Vrindavaneshwari. Lord Shamsundar is Vrindavannath. Only to those who they reveal themselves to can understand who they are. And similarly, Vrindavan reveals herself according to our particular state of consciousness. Years ago, when I was living in Vrindavan, this was about 31 years ago, I heard a story. It happened not long before. There was a man from Germany. He was a professor. And he had met one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers who went abroad. He was studying the books of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he was invited to Vrindavan to come and do some research. So he was very excited to come to Vrindavan. But he had certain mundane conceptions. He obviously was not in the mood of Akrura, as we will see as this story progresses. He took an airplane all the way from Germany to Delhi. Then he took a train from Delhi to Mathura. He got on one of those tangas, horse-drawn carriages, coming from Mathura to Vrindavan. Just when he was approaching Vrindavan, he happened to see some cows walking along the road, and they were purifying the road by the dust of their hooves, as well as by their very, very benevolent cow dung. According to those who protect the cows, according to the Vaishnava Vedic system, cow dung is most sacred and most precious. Srila Prabhupada quotes that the scriptures say that cow dung is pure. fact, Prabhupada said it was antiseptic in quality. I'll deviate from the story for a moment, divert from the story for a moment, to give an explanation of faith in cow dung. At New Vrindavan, this was in the early 80s, one big, big leader of our society came. And he came with one, he was sannyasi, and he came with one grihastha who had a little child, a small little child. And they both went to a place and some bees. New Vrindavan, there's a lot of dangers in many places. You probably have heard of these things. So a bee stung the sannyasi and stung the little boy. So they asked, you know, is there any medicine for these bee stings? It's very painful. I said, well, here we don't have any type of medicine. We just put cow dung on, whatever happens. So the sannyasi said, cow dung, you want me to put a cow dung on this open wound? So he went all the way to town and got some, to the medical store, and got some antiseptic medication. And the grihastha man, god brother, he just smeared some nice fresh cow dung on his son. The next day, the son's bee sting completely was cured. And the other devotee, his bee sting was swollen so much that he couldn't even get out of bed. It was just infected and excruciating. So Prabhupada's statements is true. Cow dung is antiseptic. So this German man, he happened to see cow dung all over the street. And I guess in Germany you don't see such a thing. So he was thinking, there's the stools all over the street. And then as they were going on, they just saw more and more cow dung, big cakes, piles of cow dung. Then he saw some little cowherd boys picking it up with their hands and putting it on baskets and carrying it on their heads. He was thinking, I will never survive. This place is totally without any hygienic standards whatsoever. It's unsanitary. So he told the Tanga, turn around. They went back to the Mathura railway station. He got on a train back to Delhi and got on a flight back to Germany. Hare Krishna. So this is what he saw in Vrindavan. He was trying to understand what is Vrindavan through his material senses. But Vrindavan is not a material place. It is the spiritual abode of the Lord. It could only be understood and seen properly through spiritual senses. However, some of us are not completely pure in heart. Our senses are not so spiritualized. We still see so many things according to our material conceptions. Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that a devotee should see through his or her ears. We should hear from the great authorities, a guru, sadhu, and shastra. Acharya Upasana. One who hears from Acharya actually knows what is what. Otherwise, everyone is seeing according to their imperfect sensual perceptions. So we hear. We hear from the great authorities. And we have faith in those words. It is through that faith that we can see Vrindavan as it is. It is through that faith that we can understand the Brijavasis and all the cows and the serpents and the dust and the trees and every aspect of Brajbhumi. We must understand according to faith in those who actually do see. Otherwise we will be certain to make offenses. Srila Prabhupada explains that offense in the holy land of Vrindavan could have very drastic effects. It is multiplied many times more than an offense in any other place. But at the same time, to make any spiritual progress in Vrindavan, that spiritual progress is multiplied many, many times over any other place. So coming to Vrindavan is a very, very wonderful opportunity. That is why Srila Prabhupada called devotees from all over the world to come here every year and purify themselves by chanting the holy names, associating with devotees, hearing about Krishna, and rendering service here. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told us, do not try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in a way that he wants to suit you. You cannot see Krishna. It is only when he was pleased upon you that he reveals himself to you. Bhaktya tvananiga shakya aham evam vidurajana jnanam jasruktatvaina praveshtam chaparantapa. Krishna tells in Gita, it is only through bhakti, or devotional service, that one can see me as I am, standing here before you. There is no other way. If we please the Vaishnavas, Shishi Radha Sham Sundha, then by their causeless infinite mercy they can reveal themselves. And then we can understand what is what. We cannot be attracted to Radha and Krishna unless they reveal themselves to us within their heart. Through service, through humility, through chanting the holy name in this spirit, serving the Vaishnavas, and showing compassion to the fallen souls, Krishna will be pleased to reveal himself. Vrindavan is none different than Krishna. It is Sri Radharani's abode, supervised by her divine love. And when a devotee is actually in this spirit of servant of the servant of the servant, not coming to Vrindavan to enjoy, but coming to serve, coming to surrender, coming to please Krishna, then and only then does the Lord reveal the actual truths of his eternal abode. So this was a Krura's spirit. He was coming to Vrindavan feeling himself so grateful. If we take coming to Vrindavan to be something ordinary, then we will not actually be grateful. We will not be depending on mercy. Well, if you think you deserve something, then it's not mercy coming to you. If you feel you have no qualification whatsoever, then whatever comes is mercy. You're able to recognize it and appreciate it. We should come to Vrindavan like beggars. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami that he asked him, actually, where is that very costly blanket that you were wearing? And Sanatana Goswami said, I saw that you looked at this blanket and you were not very happy, so I gave the blanket away to a beggar and got this torn quilt in place. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, this is very good. What will people think? You're doing madukari, going begging door to door, wearing in a costly blanket. So people will think this is hypocrisy. If you're going to be a beggar, you actually have to be a real beggar. We are beggars, begging for mercy. But in order to actually have the consciousness of being a beggar, you have to feel that you have nothing, that you're in desperate need, that you're destitute without that mercy. Therefore, Mahaprabhu taught, Trinadapi sumichena, Tadorapi sahishmana, Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadhar. If you want to really attract Krishna by the chanting of the holy names in such a way that you develop such a taste that you'll be chanting constantly, then this is the requirement. to feel oneself lower than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. That is the requirement. Queen Kunti prayed, Janmaishwaraya Shrutishubir Edamanavata. That people who have material opulences, wealth, knowledge, beauty, high position in society, if they become proud of that, that is the greatest disqualification for spiritual life. Because due to that pride, they cannot feelingly cry out Krishna's name. They may be chanting, but that type of chanting may take many, many lifetimes to bring us to the perfectional stage. But if we chant in such a humble state of mind, actually understanding how much we need Krishna, how much we're depending on Krishna, how much we have no qualifications without that mercy of the Lord and His devotees, then the Lord reciprocates according to our consciousness. He will certainly reveal Himself in His holy name. And as we develop a taste for the chanting of the holy name, then naturally the fever of material attachments is subdued and ultimately conquered. We cannot give up our desires for material enjoyment without experiencing a higher taste. In this age of Kali Yuga, there's only one way of attaining that taste, by developing a taste for chanting the holy names. Through that, all aspects of Krishna consciousness become enriched with realization and ultimately with ecstasy. So how to chant the holy names? We must be like beggars. We must feel ourselves insignificant. However powerful, learned, influential we may be within this world of death, we should not take these things seriously. We should understand it is all Krishna's giving, Krishna will take it away. But the only real wealth I can have is the mercy of the Lord. Thus Akura came to Vrindavan in this spirit, feeling himself unworthy, with such a very, very deeply grateful heart. I don't deserve to be there, but still the Lord is sending me. He's allowing me to come, causelessly. He was meditating in this way all the way. And finally, when he came to Vrindavan, he was in such a state of humble devotion, so eager to just surrender to Krishna, to render every type of service to Krishna. He saw in the pasture grounds, in the dust, Krishna's footprint, which was marked with the auspicious designs that only Krishna has. He immediately came right off of his chariot, and in ecstasy, he began to roll in the dust of the footprints of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he was rolling, tears of love were flowing profusely from his eyes. His body was trembling as he was chanting the Lord's holy names. Then he saw Krishna and Balaramji. It was just about the time of sunset, and they were performing their lila of bringing cows back to their homes. Krishna Balaramji were walking through the forest, the path. pasture grounds. Makrura fell at their lotus feet. And because of his sincere devotional spirit, Krishna lifted him up and embraced him. And then Balaramji took him by the hand and brought him to his home. Balaramji gave him a nice seat and washed his feet. They offered him to take nice bath. They brought a very, very wonderful feast for him to enjoy. And they spoke nice words. They were inquiring about Vasudeva and Devaki and the citizens of Mathura. But they actually said, but what is the use of even asking these things? Because we know they are with Kamsa, that cruel demon who is torturous and making everyone so miserable. It was a wonderful exchange. And then Akrura had to bear the message. It was a message of hatred, envy, and fear that was being presented with humility and humble devotion. Such a wonderful story this is. Kamsa is inviting cowherd men to come to Mathura. He wants you, Krishna and Balaram, to see the wonderful festival they're having for the sacred bow. And also there's going to be nice wrestling. So will you please come? So Nanda Maharaj immediately started arranging for the cowherd men to bring ox carts of nice ghee and yogurt and everything, milk products, as taxes to Kamsa. That night, the Braj Gopis, they learned of what was predestined for the next morning. And the feeling of imminent separation from Krishna just caused eruptions of inconceivable ecstasies in their hearts. The gopis, they were so humble. They were thinking that we're so unsophisticated, simple village girls. When Krishna meets the ladies of Mathura, they are so expert and so beautiful and so opulent in every ways. When their shy smiles and glances are on Krishna, he will never come back to see us. We must somehow or other stop them. In Sanskrit, the word akrura means not cruel. But they were condemning providence, that you have sent a messenger who is most cruel. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, they believed Krishna that he'll be coming right back. But the Vrijagopis, they would not believe him. So they were making every possible plan and arrangement to stop it. But when the sun was rising, Akrura was arranging his chariot very nicely. Krishna Balaram came upon that chariot. And the bullock carts of the gopas were behind Krishna, ready to attend with him. And then they were also departing. And then gopis tried by whatever means they could to express their deep love for Krishna and tried to somehow or other persuade him not to go. Krishna promised, in a few days, I will return. It is my promise. As the chariot departed, The gopis stood like motionless statues, watching the chariot with Krishna Balaram aboard go into the horizon of Vrindavan. Even when that chariot was not to be seen, they still remained motionless. The only movement was the tears flowing from their eyes as they were watching. They had their gaze fixed on the dust left behind the wheels of the chariot. So Akura came to the Jamuna. That place is not far from here. It is Akura Ghat. Dinabandhu Prabhu, maybe he will take you to that holy place. In Akura Ghat, Krishna and Balaram got down from the chariot. They approached Kalindi Jamuna and took Achman, drank some water from him. Then they got back on the chariots. Akura asked permission if he could take bath. So they gave blessings. He entered Jamuna to take his bath. As he was bathing, he saw Krishna and Balaram right before his eyes. He was very much confused. How is it that they're here? They were on their chariot. So he got out of the water and ran back to the chariot, and Krishna and Balaram were sitting on their chariot very nicely. And he was more confused. He ran back to the Jamuna. And there he saw Balaram manifest his form of Anantashesha. He had thousands of mouths, thousands of heads, so beautifully decorated, all sorts of celestial divine ornaments. He had blue clothing on also. And then he saw Krishna in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, laying on the body of Anantashesha. He saw Brahma and Shiva and all the various demigods, rishis and sages gathering around offering prayers to them. Prayers of love and worship. Akura then began to offer prayers. And this is the prayers we are reading today. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities, and having thus become peaceful, perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. Akura is praising the Lord as the ultimate goal of everyone in life. The karmis, those who follow karma kanda, through various ritualistic performances, worshipping various demigods, they are looking for some material happiness. But ultimately Krishna explains that whatever the demigods give, they are getting from me. I am the ultimate goal. Because everyone's looking for happiness, everyone's looking for peace, everyone's looking for love. Krishna's the source of everything that exists. And the yogis, they meditate on the Paramatma, try to develop many, many great mystic cities. But Paramatma is an expansion of Krishna. And here he is discussing the philosophical speculators. They try to find peace through the power of discrimination between matter and spirit. Sankhya philosophy is to have such power of discrimination that we can always perceive the difference between matter and illusion, detach ourselves from matter and and basically that's it, just become detached from all the sources of illusion. And when we give up the desire for sense gratification, to whatever degree, we can actually be peaceful. Why? Yehi samsparashcha bhoga dhuka jonaye vate akyanta banta kauteya nathe shuramate buddha. That the objects of the senses that give us pleasure, those very pleasures are the source of misery. because they're temporary. There can be no peace as long as we're trying to enjoy material energy. Because material energy has been designed specifically by the Supreme Lord to create suffering. The pleasures are to keep us attached to the forms of suffering. If there was no pleasure in this world, there would be no reason for people to want to stay here. So therefore, there's a thin veneer of pleasure that's covering a vast ocean of suffering. That's why great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, they would say, actually, in this material world, there's only suffering. Now, for some of us, that's, how is there only suffering? So look at how many people are trying to enjoy through movies and through CDs and through according to the modes of material nature, some people are enjoying sports, some people are enjoying boy or girl or family or eating or sleeping. Some are enjoying all kinds of entertainment systems. Prabhupada says there's no enjoyment in this. It's only suffering. Because actually, the enjoyments that they are enjoying are not really enjoying. They're actually the sources of suffering. So one who understands with good intelligence, vivek, discrimination, understands that the whole world is just a cause of suffering, so I shouldn't be attached, I shouldn't enjoy. Then you can become peaceful, shanti. But here Srila Prabhupada explains that such peace is meager and trivial unless they surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees are not after peace. Devotees are after love. In the early days here in Vrindavan, there was one very nice devotee, and he was in charge of construction. He was not, I don't know how much in charge, but he was working in a very senior role in constructing this Krishna Balaram temple. Now, we're just coming and enjoying the nice facilities. But devotees had to work so hard against all odds for years and years and years. They had to endure a lot of suffering to build this temple. It was not easy. So this devotee was just arguing with the people who were trying to cheat him with prices. And they were going on strike, the workers, if they didn't get certain benefits, which were unreasonable. So many things were happening. And there was underworld activities threatening and asking for bribes and so many things. And this devotee was seeing everybody else was just walking by the temple saying, Radhe, 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 Radhe. Jai Shri Radhe. So he was thinking, this is actually Vrindavan. What am I? I'm not in Vrindavan mood. I'm just battling and fighting and worrying and anxiety. These people are peaceful, just chanting Hare Krishna. So he asked Prabhupada if he could renounce this duty of overseeing construction and just be a nice sannyasi. He was a sannyasi too. And just live in Vrindavan and just chant the holy names and hear about Krishna. Be happy. Be peaceful. And Prabhupada told him he said, work now, samadhi later. He told them, we're not after peace. We're after Krishna's pleasure. The impersonalists, their conception of wanting peace is selfish. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sudurlabha prasantatma gotishupimanam. Out of millions and millions of people who have actually attained the peace of mukti, liberation from all material sufferings. Out of siddhanam, out of so many people who have attained the perfections of yoga and attained mystic siddhis. Nobody is really peaceful. They may find some temporary material peace, but it's very, very difficult to find one narayana parayana, one surrendered devotee to the Supreme Personality of God. Only that person who is surrendered to Krishna can achieve real satisfaction. eternal satisfaction. Because it is our constitutional nature. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Aranityadas. We are eternally servants of Krishna. We are meant for the pleasure of Krishna. This is the mood of Vrindavan. When the gopis of Vrindavan were asked, give the dust of your feet for Krishna's headache, they immediately started collecting every possible dust particle from their feet and packing it nicely and saying, please bring it immediately. The messenger was shocked. The yogis, the sages, the jnanis, they wouldn't give a single particle because they knew they would go to hell. He said, don't you know what will happen by putting your feet on Krishna's head? They said, yes, we know we'll go to hell, maybe forever. You still want to do it? Yes, bring it immediately. Why? The gopis did not mind going to hell for all eternity if it would relieve Krishna's headache for even one second. The gopis did not mind going to hell for all eternity if it would relieve Krishna's headache for even one second. That is why the gopis are worshipped by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as having the ultimate state of spiritual perfection. Because of their totally selfless love. That is Vrindavan. Place where we don't mind suffering, we don't mind difficulties, we don't mind anything happening, as long as Krishna is satisfied by our service. And in that state, Krishna reciprocates. Sarvadharman puritya mame kamshana. When we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. Bhakti purchases Krishna. Prem Nidhi. Love is the greatest wealth. Actually, people work so hard for money. You have seen this? Prahlad Maharaj said, for a materialistic person, money is honey. People's whole lives are so much just orchestrated around their concern, their need to either make money or defend whatever they have. Why do people like money so much? Money is paper. You can't eat paper. You can't build a house out of paper. But somehow or other, it has the power to purchase. And the more you have, the more valuable the assets you can purchase with it. From the highest planet in this material world, Brahmaloka, to the lowest, they're places of misery. But bhakti, love, can purchase Krishna. That is the greatest mystery and the ultimate understanding of the holy scriptures, that Krishna is bhaktavatsa. He is purchased by the love of his devotee. He was defeated by Bhishma. He was bound by the rope of the love of Yashoda. He was sometimes like a dancing little puppet in the hands of the elderly gopis. Krishna can be purchased only by love. Thus, devotees are not in any way impressed or concerned with those who have mystic cities, nor are they impressed or concerned with those who are enjoying the peace of liberation due to renunciation of material enjoyment. Devotees' only concern is to please Krishna, to give happiness to Krishna. Through the process, Krishna reciprocates and awakens love of God within our hearts. That is the Prema Pumartamahan, the crest jewel of all realizations that can bring eternal true satisfaction to the soul. So this is the conclusions of Akura as he is offering his prayers and his love to Lord Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Is there time for questions? Or does that mean yes or no? Does anyone have any question? Speak louder.
Krishna promises the devotees that he will return, but he doesn't come back. And if we recapture Jesus, he makes so many promises to us, he will deliver us from sinful reactions, that we will go to him with from Krishna consciousness, that his little Krishna consciousness will protect us. So how can we have faith in these promises in the back of Gita when we see Krishna making a promise that he's not promised to both these?
Very interesting question you have asked. Krishna did come back. In fact, Krishna never left. Krishna fulfilled the promise of the gopis hundreds of billions and trillions of times more wonderful than they could ever imagine. This is explained by our great acharyas, that when Krishna appeared to leave Vrindavan, he personally entered into the heart of each of the gopis in his bhava expansion. And there he was reciprocating love with them most intimately. In separation from Krishna, Vipralamba Bhav, their remembrance of Krishna and their affection for Krishna was ever increasing at every moment. They were utterly devastated by their remembrance of Krishna. They couldn't even acknowledge the external world around them. They were so engrossed in seeing the form of Krishna within their hearts. And Krishna was personally right there, reciprocating with that love. So Krishna never really left. And even on the physical level, or on the external appearance, Padma Purana describes Krishna came just outside of Braj Bhumi, he killed Dantavakra. And then after that, he came into Vrindavan. And he returned. And the Vrijavasis had a very wonderful festival again with Lord Krishna. And then he took them all back to Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. And then in his expansion, he returned to go back to Dwarka. So Krishna did not break his promise. Actually, he spoke in such a way only to increase their love. And Krishna is the absolute truth. On the level of relative truths, there is something is relative means something depends on something else. In order to, on the relative level, something is true only because something else is false. Yes, if there's no false, there can be no true. That is the relative world. It's dualities, it's opposites. Just like people say that, you're talking about you want to go back to this spiritual world where everything's happy. But, you know, what's the use? If there's not suffering, you can't really enjoy the happiness. Have you heard this? That's what people say. In the relative world, happiness, when we're suffering like anything, when there's some relief of that suffering, we're happy. So our happiness in this world depends on suffering. Because there's no real happiness. The happiness is when there's not so much suffering. But in the spiritual world, everything is situated on the absolute truth. There's absolute bliss, Satchit Ananda. So whatever Krishna says is the supreme truth. Even when he apparently lies, it is the supreme truth. Because it is spoken from the absolute truth. And this has to be understood properly. That is why it is warned people shouldn't go right to the 10th canto. Because they see Krishna is apparently telling lies. And people criticize. Why is Krishna immoral? Why is he dancing with other people's wives? But actually, if you study the first 9 cantos properly, you'll understand everyone is Prakriti and Krishna is the only Purusha. So the question is, why are you dancing with somebody else's wife? Everyone's Krishna's wife. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Nothing is ours. Everything belongs to Krishna. So if we understand the science of the absolute truth properly, we understand that Krishna was not immoral by dancing with gopis. He created them. They are all his energies, and they're all simply meant for his enjoyment, as is everything in the entire material and spiritual worlds. So when Yasoda asks Krishna, "Did you steal the butter?" he says, "No, no, Mataji, I did not steal the butter." Is that a lie? Hare Krishna. Now for someone who just doesn't understand the science of bhakti, it appears that he knows. Why do you want to worship Krishna? One time I was giving a lecture it was an extraordinary situation, but I was giving a lecture and there was all these different scholars that were there at this lecture. It was in Kentucky in the United States. And after the lecture, we just spoke basic philosophy. There was one professor there. This professor told me, we met in a parking lot, he said that he got his PhD at the Banaras Hindu University. He was an American man. He said he got his PhD at Banaras Hindu University on the Gita Govinda of Jayadev Goswami. He said, "I know all about this Krishna and Radha." He said, "I have a question for you. Why? Why do you want to worship this god who lies to his mother and who's going to having these leelas with ladies?" He's actually disgusted. You know, it's what he studied the material for 8 years, and he's considered a world authority on it. But for him, it's just a subject of study. Why do you want to worship this person as God? I told him that we should study Bhagavad Gita. Have you ever studied the second canto of Bhagavad Gita? He said, "No." And I started explaining how, first you have to understand you're not this body. Then you have to understand that you're the soul. Then you have to understand who is God and what is God. Then this is your... You're studying the postgraduate PhD study of spirituality before you've even gone to nursery school. And while he was talking to me, he was smoking a cigarette. And I pointed out a few things like this. And his reply was, "My wife is waiting for me. I have to go home." He had no arguments. So people do not understand. When Krishna tells Yasoda Mayi, "I didn't steal the butter." He didn't steal the butter. Because to steal something, it has to belong to somebody else. The butter belongs to him. Everything belongs to him. So he didn't steal it. He just claimed his property. But he wrong. Does that answer your question? So Krishna never lies. And when he does, it's the absolute truth. And Lord Ram, he would never do these absolute truth lies. That's why we like Krishna. Krishna, everything is in Krishna. When Krishna performs these wonderful pastimes of appearing ordinary, it actually increases the highest levels of loving reciprocation with his devotees. Is there any other questions? Aindra Prabhu, Hari Ram. Now we will get commentary.
Even if after all of this, you still don't have faith in Krishna and Krishna's words, that was also handled nicely by our acharyas. When they explained the reason for Krishna saying Kuntiya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashiti, that my dear Arjuna, you declare it boldly, because people may not believe me, people may not have faith, because after all I was born in Mathura and they have that reputation of being liars and cheaters. So even if you don't have faith, because it's understandable that you may not have faith in a Mathura Vasi, but so therefore you declare it boldly. Let the devotees say it. And because the devotees' words are always true, if the devotees' words are always true, then we should have faith in the words of the devotees, or the faith in the words of the spiritual master, faith in the words of the representative of Krishna.
Any other questions? Thank you, Andrew Prabhu. Thank you very, very much. Should I tell one more? This is a very nice story which illustrates the type of faith that captures the heart of Krishna. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu repeatedly says that one who has faith and love, I become a prisoner in that devotee's heart. I'll give you one example here of when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became a prisoner in a devotee's heart due to his great faith. This is due to at the time of the Sat Praharia Lila, or Mahaprakash, in the house of Srivas Pandit. Lord Chaitanya generally was in the role of a devotee to teach the world. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam praja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshaya shamayasi. Krishna came in the Dwapara Yuga and told everyone, surrender to me. Just surrender to me. I will relieve you of all sinful reactions. Do not fear. And he gave all the information. Always think of me, worship me, become my devotee, offer your homage to me. In this way you will come to me without fail. This is my promise. This is the promise of the absolute truth. It is infallible. Actually, we can make promises in this world, but because we're not the supreme controller of all controllers, we can't really guarantee any of our promises. Only Krishna can really promise, honestly, because he's the controller of all controllers. He can give unconditional guarantee, and he gives. But how to actually follow his instructions? The Lord is so kind, he came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the role of devotee to teach us by his example. Now he knew that Mayavadis and impersonalists will become very rampant in Kali Yuga. So if anyone ever called him Vishnu, he would hold his ears and scream out, Vishnu, Vishnu, save me! There was nothing that he could not tolerate other than hypocrisy and lie about philosophy. So on one day, Lord Chaitanya decided to fulfill all the devotees' heart's desires, to actually manifest himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and accept their wholehearted worship and love. Devotees were so much astonished. The Lord, in Srivas Thakur's house, began kirtan in the spirit of his own devotee, chanting Krishna's names. Then before everyone's eyes, he ascended and sat on the throne of Vishnu. Then he told everyone to sing the Abhishekam song. The devotees knew exactly what he was saying. He was giving them a chance to perform Abhishek. They brought thousands and thousands and thousands of water, but pots of water from the Ganga. There was one simple maidservant lady named Duki, and she was helping just carry the water. So insignificant. She didn't even make herself visible. All the big devotees were coming and taking the water and giving it to Nityananda, Srivas, and Advaita, and they were pouring it on Lord Chaitanya's head. And she was just in the back, just very carefully bringing the water from the Ganga and just organizing the water pots in nice lines so that people can nicely get it. No one took note of her, except one person, Lord Chaitanya, who was sitting on the throne of Vishnu. And he asked Srivas, "Who is this lady?" He said, "Her name is Duki." Duki means sorrow, miserable. Yes? Lord Chaitanya said, "This name Duki does not sit properly in my heart. From this day on, her name will be Suki." Suki means happy. Just by giving her the name Suki, immediately, ecstatic love awakened within her heart. She attained the perfection of life. What did she do? She was just an invisible, behind-the-scene, simple servant of the servant of the servant. Then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to call each one of his devotees forward, and he was personally revealing to them the form of the Lord that they worshipped and loved. He called Kolavetra Sridhar. Kolavetra Sridhar is a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Kolavetra Sridhar looked up at Lord Chaitanya, and there he saw beautiful form of Krishna, dark like a tamal tree, holding his flute in his hand, and on his side was the beautiful form of Balaramji. He had the darshan of Krishna Balaram. He called Murari Gupta, who was Hanuman in his previous life. He said, "Look at me, Murari." And he saw the beautiful form of Lord Ram, complexion of Durva grass, holding a beautiful golden bow in his hands, Sita Lakshman beside him. He was in complete ecstasy. Then he looked down and he saw he had a tail. And he turned into Hanuman. Then he fell unconscious. So in this way he was fulfilling everyone's desires, giving everyone benedictions. Ask anything. But the night was coming to an end, and he didn't even look in the direction of Mukunda. So devotees are paradukaduki. Their happiness is another person's happiness, and their sorrow is another person's sorrow, especially amongst devotees. So Srivas Pandit, even though he had already seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifest from Lord Chaitanya's body as Krishna, as Ram, everyone was in bliss. But at the same time, at a certain point, everyone was suffering because Mukunda Dat was not getting special mercy. So Mukunda was weeping behind some pillar, because neglect is very, very great suffering to the heart when you love someone. So Shriva said that Mukunda Dutt, he is being ignored by you. Please call him forward. Give him your mercy. He's weeping, he's crying. Lord Chaitanya became angry as fire. Do not you ever, don't you ever again take the side of that wretched rascal Mukunda. Hare Krishna. Srivas was shocked. All the devotees were shocked. It was thunderbolts in their soft hearts. Said, my Lord, Mukunda has given his life, his soul, his everything to serve you, to please you. When he sings kirtans, the whole assembly of devotees' hearts melt in ecstasy. If he's made some offense, if he's done something wrong, please forgive him. What could he have possibly done? That rascal, Mukunda! You have heard the saying that someone puts straw between their teeth, approaches you with great humility, then beats you on the head with a club? That is Mukunda. Nobody could understand. He said when he's with the Vaishnavas, he's talking about Krishna, he's hearing about Krishna, he's singing and dancing about Krishna, but then when he goes to the impersonalists, he hears and speaks what they say. When he goes to the ordinary people, he hears and speaks what they say. The impersonalists, what do? They are denying the body of the Lord. They are beating the body of the Lord. Therefore, Mukunda is coming and coming before me with folded hands and straw between his teeth. Then he beats me on the head with club. I will never allow him to see me. So Mukunda was devastated. He heard every word of it. He was practically dead in grief. He was weeping and crying, wailing, I will never see the Lord. I will never see the Lord. The Lord said, he will never see me again. Now it is explained by Vrindavan Das Thakur that actually Mukunda, when he was very young, he was led by some Brahmins to mix with all different kinds of people. But after he became a devotee, he never did that. After he came into the association of devotees. But Lord Chaitanya, the Paramatma in the heart, he could understand and know everything that we've ever done. And ultimately, he wanted to show the world the glories of Mukunda. So Mukunda was weeping. Will I ever see the Lord again? Will I ever be able to see him again? And Srivas said to the Lord, Mukunda wants to know, will he ever be able to see you again? And Lord Chaitanya, in a thunderous voice, angry voice, he said, he will see me after 10 million births. Those words splashed Mukunda Dutt with bliss. He started dancing in ecstasy. Tears of love and happiness were flowing from his eyes. He was dancing so much. I will see, I will see, I will, I will, I will. After only 10 million births, I will have the darshan of the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I will see. He was dancing so happy. Lord Chaitanya was so pleased. He was pleased with Mukunda Dutt's faith. He was so humble, he was so grateful, that if I have to wait 10 million births, that's nothing. That's absolutely insignificant when I think of what I will get, the darshan of the Supreme Lord Gauranga. I'm so fallen, I'm so insignificant, I don't deserve. But he's so, such causeless mercy, he's going to give me his darshan in only 10 million births. And he had such faith in the Lord's words. Now some of us, we've been chanting and trying to follow the four regulative principles for maybe 5 years, 10 years, 30 years. It's hardly a fraction of even one little birth. And sometimes we become frustrated. Sometimes we even complain to Krishna. Why? Why I'm not seeing you? Why I see the deity? I'm not in ecstasy. why my voice isn't choked up and tears aren't flowing from my eyes and my hairs aren't standing on end and my limbs aren't trembling. Why this isn't happening to me? I've been your devotee for 20 years. Hare Krishna. Take this lesson from Mukunda Dutt. If you go on renouncing everything of this world, performing austerities, performing all the regulative principles for 10 million births, and then you get to see the Lord, we should be so grateful. I don't deserve it. That was the spirit of Mukunda. Therefore, he was just dancing, splashed in ecstasy. He was drowning in an ocean of ecstasy. I will see, I will see, I will see. He was dancing all over the place. Lord Chaitanya said, bring Mukunda to see me immediately. So the devotees went to Mukunda and said, Mukunda, the Lord wants to see you immediately. He wants you to see him immediately come. But Mukunda was so much in another world, thinking about in only 10 million births, that he didn't even hear them. He was just, I will see, please, 10 million births, I will see, I will see. You can see him now, come, come. He wasn't able to hear. They had to pick him up and carry him and put him right in front of the Lord. And Lord, when he saw the Lord, all of his heart's desires were ultimately fulfilled. Then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested Mukunda Dutt to offer him prayers. And he said, my Lord, unless one has pure devotion, they cannot find any real happiness, even if they see you. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying. Don't try to see Krishna, try to serve Krishna in such a way he wants to see you. He said, there were so many people who saw you, but they didn't feel any happiness because they were not your devotees. They had no devotion. I don't understand Krishna. I don't understand Moila. I have no devotion, nothing in my heart, but still, I'm feeling happiness upon seeing you. This is your causeless mercy. Here's the examples. Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha saw your beautiful form of Varahadev face to face, but he felt no happiness because there was no devotion. Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu saw Nrsingadev Bhagavan face to face, but he was in anxiety. He felt no happiness at all because there was no devotion. And there's Duryodhana. Duryodhana, right in his own house, with his eyes, he saw the universal form, the Virat Rupa. But he was miserable. He was finding no happiness because he had no devotion. And those rascal kings, when you kidnapped Rukmini, they attacked you. Rukma, Jarasand, Shishupal. They saw you face to face, but there was no happiness because they had no devotion. Mukunda said, how is it? I have no devotion in my heart, but still I'm finding such happiness by seeing you. I am as worthless as a pile of ashes. My only hope is your causeless mercy. When you went into Mathura, Kubja, she was just a hunchback maidservant. But yet, the garland maker, just a simple worker, but they found such bliss when they saw you because they had devotion. But that same day in Mathura, Kamsa saw you. But he felt nothing but misery and suffering seeing you because he had no devotion. Only one who has true unconditional devotion can find satisfaction in seeing you. Only to one who has devotion do you reveal yourself as you are. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased by hearing this description of pure devotional service that he said, everything you are saying is perfect, Mukunda Dutt. Because you have pure devotion, therefore you understand this. Let me tell you something. When I was walking through the streets of Mathura, there was that washerman. Do you want to know something about that washerman's life? Previously, 10,000 births, he performed severe austerities and did all kinds of worship with the singular desire to see the Supreme Lord. And to fulfill his desire, I appeared right before him in the shop. The washerman was Kamsa's washerman. Krishna said, give me some clothes. In fact, give me those King's Kamsa clothes over there. What? Nonsense! This is an aparad to the king! You want to take the king's clothes? Get out of this place. Lord Chaitanya said, I took my hand and chopped off his head. It took him 10 million births of austerities to see me, and then he saw me. But because he had no devotion, he was not feeling any happiness. So I cut off his head. Hare Krishna. Of course he got liberated. So we're not allowed to cut off people's head because we cannot give liberation. Krishna can do. So he was so happy. He said, yes, Mukundada, what you are saying is the absolute truth. That the only real happiness comes through devotion. I am the prisoner in the heart of that person who has devotion to me. Mukundada, I give you this benediction that whenever you chant the holy names, the hearts of all the devotees will completely melt in pure ecstatic love for me. You will always be in the association of my devotees, and whenever I incarnate in this world, you will be with me chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
end today's class by repeating the benediction that is bestowed upon anyone who hears this story. Vrindavan Das Thakur says that anyone who hears this story of Mukunda Das manifesting his great faith in Lord Chaitanya, that person will personally sing in Mukunda Das Kirtan in the near future. And anyone who finds happiness in hearing this story will very soon meet Lord Chaitanya and all of his associates face to face. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.
I'm going to start here tonight.